It's 12 noon. The program's Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the show today, we have guitarist Angelo Favis, who is giving a recital on Saturday evening in Springfield, sponsored by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. And he is a professor at Illinois State University. He came over to join us for the show, play some live preview pieces on the program today. And so we're really looking forward to hearing him. But first, here's a little introduction from banjo player Bela Fleck and mandolin player Chris Thiele. It's a keyboard sonata, originally by Domenico Scarlatti. This program's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the show today, guitarist Angelo Favis, classical guitarist, I should add, since we've had plenty of other different kinds of guitarists on the show. And he is a professor of guitar at Illinois State University in Normal. Also leads the guitar ensemble there, which we actually had on this program somewhere early on in our run last winter, I think, or last spring. And he is giving a recital in Springfield this Saturday at 8 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church on South 7th Street. It's sponsored by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society, which does have periodic recitals from not only guitarists in the area, but occasional guests from at least a little ways out. And we're pleased to have Angelo on the program today.
My pleasure to be here, Kevin. Thank you.
Yeah, glad you could come in, because I know you've got a full teaching schedule, and I know you have, or did in the spring, have at least 17 guitar students.
Yes.
What's your load right now?
Right now it's 12, so had a lot of people graduate, but we have some new people coming in this coming fall. So
it's got to be an up and down thing with any classical studio in a school of music, I imagine, where you just never know how many people happen to be playing guitar right at that, you know, in a given year, and then choose to apply to Illinois State, who are also good enough to get in.
Yes, that's true. I mean, sometimes we do get a lot of applications, but then sometimes it's just that. They don't go past the application stage and actually audition. Or sometimes they do audition, and then they decide to go elsewhere, or they just disappear.
Well, I know one of the places that they're not going to go is the University of Illinois, where we're sitting, because they don't actually have a classical guitar.
Well, they did have
studio.
One at some point, I believe, in the 70s. I don't know if it reached into the 80s.
Well, I think I actually know the last professor of guitar, and of course, now that I say that, I'm going to forget his name. He's a friend that I had when I lived in Chicago, and he said he was the last guitar professor they had down here, and maybe when you're playing a little later, I'll think of it. But I know there's not been one since I've been here, which has been since 1991. And I wonder, is it, as far as you know, an uncommon thing for universities to have a classical guitar department, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. It depends on the university. I mean, many of the big universities do have them. Some programs are more well-known than others, but I mean, just like you, I don't know why they decided to cut the program here. Although the library continues to order guitar music, so if we don't have it, then I come here.
You come to the University of Illinois. Do most classical guitar students, or even most classical guitarists for that matter, do they tend to begin playing the classical guitar, and that's an interest for them whenever they pick up the instrument? Or do at least some of them start, say, on rock guitar or other kinds of guitar, and then morph into classical? Or how does that work?
I think the most common experience is that they play other styles first, predominantly rock. And then from there, they gravitate towards classical, usually one or two ways, where they've heard a, or one of several ways, rather. They've heard a recording, and they like it.
Of classical, somebody classical, playing classical.
Somebody playing classical, and so they look for a teacher. Or they go to a high school that has a guitar program that actually features some classical instruction.
Now, how common is that? That strikes me as I'm surprised actually that anybody does it.
Actually, there's quite a number of schools in Chicago that do that. I don't think it's as common here in our area, but certainly in Chicago, in the suburbs, I know Lincoln Way has a very strong high school guitar program up in New Lenox.
Sounds like something, if anybody's going to have it, New Trier High School might have that, but I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
And so do you find that you get a lot of students from Chicago?
Yes. Yes. Almost all of them are from the Chicago area.
Really?
Pretty much.
So therefore almost all from the state of Illinois.
Yes.
Well, because Illinois State, you get the state tuition.
Yes. Very important.
Well, I want to talk with you a little bit more about different kinds of styles and different types of guitar playing, but let's hear a sample of something you're going to... I assume you brought stuff you're going to play on your recital. Maybe you brought some other stuff that you're not.
No, this is stuff that I'm playing for my recital.
Okay, so this is a preview of Angelo Favis' recital this Saturday in Springfield. He's with us here live in our studio on Live and Local. What are we going to hear?
This is... one of Brouwer's 20 studies.
This is Leo Brouwer?
Guitar. Yes. And this is from the later set of 10. I believe this is number 14. And it's for two-note chords.
Two-note chords.
Two-note chords and slurs. So that is the sort of the subheading for this particular
study.
Okay,
so that's the study here, the etude.
Yes.
Okay. Music by Leo Brouwer, Cuban composer of the 20th century.
Yes.
Played here in our studio on Live and Local by Angelo Favis, who teaches at Illinois State University, and he's giving a recital sponsored by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society this Saturday evening at 8 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church there. You said that was an etude or a study of two-note chords. Is it fair to say that because you have four fingers on your left hand as well as on your right, that the most you can have in a chord is four notes?
Six, actually.
You can have six. Now, how does that happen?
Well, if you use the bar, then...
The bar, meaning?
Bar A, sometimes what's called a capo, or sometimes you'd hear the word capo.
Capo. Mm-hmm.
But using your index finger laying across the strings, then you cover all six strings, then the other three can cover three other notes, and so the bar covers the other three that the fingers don't.
If you don't have the bar, how many can you manage?
You can still manage six if you have open strings involved. So, for example, I have four fingers down, and then I have the lowest and the highest string open.
I think you can cover a couple of strings with one finger, or not easily?
Yes,
if you
sometimes
wanted to do that.
Yeah. Less common is using, for example, the middle finger or the ring finger to cover more than one. Although a lot of rock guitarists and jazz guitarists do that naturally.
Well, as I said, we'll get in a little later to some of the stylistic differences, because I'm very curious about... It'd actually be fun sometime to have a room full of guitarists who play different styles of music. And
that would be cool.
Get you all to talk about how you approach the instrument differently. And I'd also be curious to know how many cross over into other areas, which actually raises the question, do you play other kinds of music besides classical on the guitar? Or have you?
Well, you can say pop music, or, you know, I can strum chords. I've accompanied church at church. And choirs, so. But I don't specifically, for example, play jazz. I like to listen to it, but I think it would take too much time to try and learn it well.
So you were one of those guitarists who got interested in the classical guitar from the beginning?
Actually, no. But I started out listening to Clapton, but never getting deeply into that style of music. You know, I would maybe try to get the melody by ear, and that's all I would play. And then I'd look up chord charts and just play along songs like John Denver and stuff like that. And then when I entered high school, I was a freshman in high school, I saw somebody playing classical guitar, and I said, I want to learn that.
Mm.
And from then on, after my first lesson, I knew this was what I was going
to do.
Yeah.
Coming back to the etude that you just played and the tradition of etudes, do you have any idea where did that tradition start for the guitar? I mean, I think with piano it started maybe with Chopin, of doing etudes or studies on a particular technical aspect and actually making concert pieces out of them, or what could be concert pieces.
Well, the idea of etudes... on guitar, on this guitar specifically, you can trace back to Fernando Sor, Mauro Giuliani, Napoleon Cost from the 19th century. Sor especially, when he first started out, even though he considered them etudes, they were actually pretty hard. They weren't exactly easy finger stuff that you'd give a beginner. But in his mind, since he was an accomplished guitarist, this should have been easy. And some of them focused on one thing, some didn't, maybe a couple of other things. It was always with a musical aim in mind rather than just technical.
Well, I mean, as somebody who played French horn once upon a time and played many etudes, I'm certainly familiar with some that are very hard, and not so, but focusing on particular technical aspects of the instrument. But I would say most of the ones I played, I wouldn't ever want to play in a performance anywhere. It's something you want to leave in a practice room.
Right.
But yet things like these of Brouwer, and as you said, Fernando Sor and the others earlier, you can easily, I mean, they're beautiful pieces of music.
Yes. And you have to pick and choose. You know, there are some that I think they're charming, but probably most accomplished guitarists wouldn't put them in concert, they'd choose the more difficult ones that were really very musical.
When you're starting to learn a guitar, a classical guitar, where do you start typically from a technical point of view? Do you start learning scales? Do you start music, learning chords? Or how does one usually get going? Or does that vary?
That's an interesting question. It does vary. I mean, in my case, I was self-taught.
Entirely?
Up until I received my first classical lesson. But before that, I just taught myself to play. So I looked at chord charts and started forming chords. And then some of my classmates in elementary school, you know, already knew how to play, so I'd copy what they were doing. There's a lot of that going on, just kind of imitation. When my students teach, you know, usually they'll teach starting with one string at a time, a few notes on the string, eventually building a little scale, and then going from there, forming chords with the strings that they've learned after that.
Are scales something that are typically taught on guitars, or is that not something you worry about so much?
They are, and if they're not, they should be.
Good. I'm glad to hear you say that. Because, you know, when I some listeners may know I conduct the youth orchestra here in town and, of course, hold auditions every year, and I'm always astounded at the number of people on any instrument who come in and they can't play scales. And I just assumed from my own background that everybody learns scales, you know, and apparently
not. Well, it's interesting because sometimes even when they audition, you know, if you don't specify that you want to listen to scales, I don't think they're going to be taught scales. Or if they do, maybe depending on the style that they actually started on, maybe they'll learn pentatonic scales or certain modes, but not necessarily diatonic scales as we know it in classical playing.
Pentatonic being a five-note scale, which can be almost any five notes. Diatonic, usually,
yes.
The scales we know, C major, various minors, and so on.
Right.
Why did you say if they're not learning scales, they should? Why did you say that?
I think scales are a good tool for getting to know your instrument, especially the range, and just navigating through the instrument. One, and it also teaches your ear, I believe, to hone in to a particular key. And so if you're listening to the piece of music and you improvise, sometimes you'll do scalar stuff, really, when you improvise, melodic stuff. A lot of melodies are scalar in nature. And I think only when you are accomplished in that sort of thing can you expand and then start to do much more difficult things. So, but at least for the basic, it's good for the fingers, just kind of get finger exercise, so to speak, and also to get to know your instrument.
So when you had your first formal classical lesson, where did you start then, or where did you pick up at that point?
At that point, my teacher taught me note reading first because I didn't know how to read notes. So he just diagrammed the open strings and then taught me notes up to the fifth fret, you know, what those were and what they looked like on the paper. And then from there proceeded to teach me a scale based on that.
And then gradually adding real music.
Yes.
Which is kind of important. Speaking of, since we have you here and you have your guitar, let's hear another real piece of music. We're listening to and talking with Angelo Favis from I keep getting my universities mixed up, Illinois State University, it says so right here, who's giving a recital in Springfield on Saturday evening at 8 o'clock, and we're very pleased to have been able to get him to come over to Urbana and play for us today.
Well, how about another Brouwer Etude?
How about it? Sure.
This time it's number 19, and this is for four-note chords.
So we heard two-note chords earlier.
So now we hear four-note chords.
We're graduate. Does that come? Well, I guess it would come later in the progression, you would think.
Yes.
Of etudes. Thank you. I guess that's another fairly typical hallmark of etudes or studies, that they tend to be fairly short.
Yes.
I guess they figure if you can do this technique for a certain period of time and make music out of it, then you know, you can move on to the next one.
Well, Brouwer's etudes are fairly short. There are some longer ones. Not that I'm going to play a long one today, but there are some longer ones, not necessarily by Brouwer, but by other composers. Villa-Lobos, for example.
Brazilian composer,
yes.
Heitor Villa-Lobos. What do you find especially challenging for yourself personally? I mean, do you run into some of these etudes and think, man, I've really got to work at this because this is a technique that always challenges me?
Well,
maybe your students won't be listening right now because you're supposed to know all and be able to do all, right?
Well, no. I mean, they know I'm human, so.
Well, that's encouraging.
But I like doing certain etudes because it helps keep the fundamentals in check. I think one of the most difficult composers actually or difficult pieces are those by Giuliani, a 19th century Italian composer. Even his etudes can be difficult because they're so fundamentally based. And, you know, you try to play them, they're easy to read slow. But once you try to play them at tempo, then, you know, sometimes you realize, oh, actually, I really can't play. My fundamentals are lacking. So
what are fundamentals? What do you mean when you say fundamentals?
Like playing with slurs or legato. Playing scales, playing in octaves or thirds, stuff like that. Arpeggios, sometimes the arpeggio patterns that he introduces are actually quite challenging.
Arpeggios are broken chords.
Yes.
You know, do, mi, so, and so on.
So instead of playing, yeah, the chord like that.
And, that's playing them broken is harder sometimes than playing the chord?
Yes, because you can have just a straight. You can play it in six. You can have it in eight. And you know all sorts of variations on those notes, the order of the notes.
You mentioned, actually, I think the first thing you said was playing legato versus what? Legato meaning very smooth.
Yes, or slurred.
Sounds, or slurred.
At least for guitar, slurred note. Instead of reattacking the note, trying to get that even both in sound and also in the space between the notes.
So in the last instance, you plucked once with your thumb, and the second note you simply...
I hammered down.
Hammered with your left, with the finger and the left hand.
Yes. So for a rock guitarist or a jazz guitarist, that kind of slur is called a hammer-on.
Mm. A hammer what?
Hammer-on.
Hammer-on.
And then the other, the opposite is the pull-off.
So that's where you had the finger down and you actually pulled
pluck,
it a little bit.
Yes, with the left hand.
Pluck with the left hand. I've heard various guitarists do this, and Tommy Emmanuel was in the studio, and I remember one of the things he was plucking with his right hand and his left hand, and you know, it was how often is that sort of technique called for, where you're going back and forth with sort of plucking with both hands?
It depends, but usually you encounter that, you know, in almost every piece, there's always some sort of slur going on, you know, while the other fingers are occupied.
Every once in a while, you in violin, you'll see that which I would think would be rather harder to make a nice sound actually. Where you of course you bow with your right hand and you normally finger with your left, but then somebody'll ask you to do some plucking
on the left hand
while you're also bowing, and which just sort of blows my mind to be able to
kind of like Paganini.
He would. You mean for the guitar?
No, at least for violin.
For violin, yeah. For violin. Well, that would be one of them. Yeah, I'm sure. But Paganini, you know, I've read variously that Paganini either was or wasn't a guitarist.
He was a guitarist.
He was a guitarist.
He was a guitarist, and from all accounts, quite an accomplished guitarist.
And did he leave anything for solo guitar? I know he's left some stuff for guitar and violin.
Yes, he did, unfortunately. Many of them are charming, but I wouldn't put them on a concert program, except for one. There's a grand sonata for guitar with obbligato violin. And most guitarists, like John Williams, have recorded it just integrating the violin obbligato part.
Mm. That's obligato is one of those words I always have to look up. Can you give us a definition of that, or do you need to look it up too?
Well, I don't know if my definition will be correct, but my understanding is it's an added voice that you could do or do without. At least that's my interpretation of it.
I'm going to have to go look that up a little bit later. I don't even think we have a musical dictionary. Oh, we do have, of course, the big Grove Dictionary in our studio here. Different types of guitars. Are there, I assume that as in rock guitars and so on, there are different types of classical guitars, or not really?
Not really. Well, if you, guitars with more strings, they're classical guitars, but they're 7-string guitars, 8-string, and 10-string instruments. They follow the same basic construction, except the neck is wider to accommodate the extra strings, even though for many of the additional strings, you don't really finger them. They're just tuned diatonically, so you can have these extra basses.
They vibrate, is what they do?
Yeah.
Is that for any guitar that's more than 6 strings, that's typical?
Yes.
7 strings, I never heard of a 7-string guitar.
Well, actually, have you had the LA Guitar Quartet in the studio?
LA
when
guitar?
They were here, yeah, when they were
No,
here.
That would be really fabulous. No, we haven't.
John Dearman, one of their guitarists, plays on a 7-string.
But that other string just sort of hangs out there.
No, he uses it.
He does use it.
Yeah. The neck isn't so wide that he can't make use of it. So it's not just an open string. He actually does stuff with it.
But otherwise, the difference between classical guitars is subtle, depending on who makes it. And
yes.
What sort of things do you look for, or does a guitarist look for, when choosing a guitar?
Well, guitars usually come with either a spruce soundboard or a cedar soundboard.
And the soundboard is what?
It's the top of the guitar,
okay.
The one with the sound hole
on
it. And spruce guitars normally are usually very clear. Some people describe them as cold, although they can have a warm sound. But the balance between the strings and the sound projection, all the notes are very, very clear. Whereas cedar guitars have a very warm, very Spanish sound, or at least that's how I would describe it. The guitar I have here in the studio has a redwood top.
So where does that fit into things?
Well, I mean, I hadn't heard of a redwood top until I got this guitar. Mm. It's a very nice, it has a very nice warm sound. It's 42 years old. So.
Made
by Jose Uribe in 1968.
And where is he?
He is actually living in Vista, California. And I had an opportunity to visit him over between Christmas and New Year. And it was a pretty good visit. He looked the guitar over and he said, I don't normally listen to 40-year-old instruments. So we had a nice 2.5-hour visit.
Mm. Wow. So when you picked this guitar, was it just purely sound you were looking for? Feel? What other kinds of things interest a guitarist when you're shopping?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I really didn't pick out this guitar. When I first came to the U.S. from the Philippines, I had with me a Yamaha. Many students have that. And I thought it was a nice guitar. Otherwise, I wouldn't play it. And my teacher wanted me to compete. He said, but you're not going to go far with that guitar. So I'm going to lend you one of mine, which was this one, and, see what happens. And it was night and day. I mean, this was so resonant. It was much lighter. And so I used it, and I happened to win the competition. So he wasn't ready to sell it, but I convinced him to sell it. And so I've had this since 1989.
Wow. So it's kind of your first, quote-unquote, real competition-level classical guitar.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you liked it well enough not to get rid of it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Even though it's old and has a lot of cracks, I can't get rid of it. I've been tempted, but I can't get rid of it.
Maybe we'll ask you about those cracks coming up in a little bit. But let's remind our listeners that this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. And I'm Kevin Kelly. And my guest on the show today is Angelo Favis, who teaches guitar at Illinois State University in Normal. And is here with us to give a bit of a preview of his recital in Springfield this Saturday. It's the 23rd, 8 o'clock, First Presbyterian Church on South 7th Street there. And let me mention also that our broadcast today is made possible in part by a grant from St. Joseph Apothecary in St. Joseph, a full-service pharmacy specializing in compounding medications to meet individual patient needs. St. Joseph Apothecary invites you to join them in supporting WILL. What would be our next preview piece of Saturday's recital?
Let's see. I can try some Bach.
Well, that doesn't sound very encouraging. I can try it.
Well, Bach is very difficult.
See if it actually
on
works.
Any instrument. So, and you know, we're on the radio, so it's kind of a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say you're 5 days out from the recital. I hope you're beyond trying it.
Oh, but at least you know I have to tune. So.
Oh, okay.
But in recital, at least you can say, well, you know, it's if something happens, something happens. It's the occasion of the...
Well, you can say that on the radio, too.
That's true.
It's live, so here we go.
Except that there are, I think, more listeners on the radio.
Probably true. 4,000 or 5,000, something like that.
As opposed to, you know, a few hundred.
A few hundred of the church, yeah.
This is from a keyboard partita originally, transcribed by David Tannenbaum, who was one of my teachers in San Francisco. And this is the prelude to the first keyboard partita. Thank you.
Well, a few questions actually coming out of that experience just now. First, just even watching your fingers move, it looked much more difficult than either of the Brouwer pieces you played.
Oh, it's very difficult.
Much more complex. What makes Bach difficult in general? I mean, you said it seems to be in general difficult.
I don't know. I think it's just hard to play really well. Even some of the pieces that are, I think for like the keyboard teaching pieces that he wrote for his sons, they're actually quite difficult. They require an ease of playing that, you know, I think takes time to attain.
The earlier etudes of Brouwer, one of them was 2-note chords and one was 4-note chords, and this one you really had your fingers were spread all over the place, like the one chord, you know. I've got my finger here spread about as wide as the two outside fingers can go, and that's looked like what you were doing a number of times in there.
Yes, and what makes this particular partita difficult is the fact that it was not originally written for the guitar. You know, it was written for the keyboard, and so
where you've got 10 fingers.
Yeah, this huge span, and so you know to approach transcription is another challenge. What notes do you take out? Or what notes do you keep in certain octaves? When do you change the octave because it's better for the instrument?
Right before you played that, you were retuning the instrument and said, it's sort of finicky today, referring to the instrument.
Yes.
What did you mean by that, and when is it and when is it not? You know, well, what makes an instrument finicky?
It's always finicky, but tuning in general, a guitar, you know, can be quite difficult. The fretting system is not very exact. I mean, you can be mathematical. I think makers can be very mathematical about the placement of the frets, but when it's actually driven into the wood, you know, any slight deviation is going to have consequences. So many times, I find that I have to do what's called compromise tuning, where it'll sound, for the most part, in tune across the board. If I tuned it very well down here in this area, when I climb up, it's going to sound out of tune, and vice versa.
Well, plus you try to be, I mean, the frets are placed in a precise position, but yet when you actually, if you took the frets away, you might not actually place your finger in the same spot to get it better in tune.
Yes.
Is there such a thing as fretless guitar?
Well, I know there are fretless basses. There probably is a fretless guitar.
I mean, I've wondered if it wouldn't
floating around.
What's the point of the frets? I mean, like a violin and an upright bass, they don't have frets. I would think you might actually have a better chance of being in tune if you didn't have frets.
That's true.
I never thought of that before. Actually. Guitars always have frets.
Well, it probably allows for, and this is, you know, conjecture on my part, probably just a more definite placement of the fingers rather than trying to kind of find your way in, as opposed to violin, for example, and basses, which rely a whole lot more on single-line music. Even though they do have chords, you know, occasionally.
True, right. But,
that here where it's more chordal, I think the frets allow you at least greater accuracy in terms of where you should place your fingers.
Well, plus there's a much longer neck on a guitar than at least any of the other string instruments besides bass.
Right.
So you've got, you know, more territory to cover. The other thing I wonder just from listening to that is something I've thought of very often, but never had a chance to ask anybody this question, listening to recordings and live and so on, is one of the incidentals of playing guitar the sound of the finger sliding across the string? You know, sometimes you hear the slide, you hear the squeak, and I've wondered, is that something you try to minimize, or is that something that it just goes with the territory, and sometimes you even use it to effect?
It's both. We try to minimize it if it's not called for. And then in certain types of music, it is used as an effect. And then we do it. But especially on the bass strings, we try to minimize that a lot. However, due to the nature of the way the strings are made, the basses are wound, that there's almost always going to be some sort of noise when you move the finger. And the only way to avoid that is if you used what are called flat wound strings.
Mm.
And so there are no ridges from the winding, from the steel winding, to kind of generate that sound against your callus.
How do they accomplish that, I wonder?
I don't know. But some guitarists will take their regular strings and try to sand it down a little bit to make it smoother.
So then you don't hear the finger sliding on the string itself, but then you still may hear it sliding over the frets.
Yes.
And making a little bumping sound and so on.
Right.
Yeah, I've just always been curious about that. I could imagine that maybe it's a point of pride now and then. This is the sound a guitar makes, you know, when you play certain certain technical things.
No. I mean,
you do try.
We do try to minimize it. I mean, I think there are just times you just, you know, kind of grin and bear it, so to speak.
And then, of course, when you're playing in a studio and you're right in front of a microphone, then
just
it's going to
compounds the problem.
Yeah, exactly. At least in a concert hall or in a church, you don't have that.
Right.
Do you amplify yourself in performance spaces if it's over a certain size?
Not if I'm playing solo. If I'm playing chamber music, I may. For example, if I play with actually and even in a small sized hall, if I'm playing, for example, with string quartet, I need to be amplified.
At least just a touch.
Yes, just so you notice that, there's actually sound coming out of the instrument.
And so this guy sitting there making them, going through the motions.
Yeah.
And being drowned out by the other string players.
And then the other string players can then let go, too. They don't have to worry about kind of playing down.
Playing very soft.
Playing very softly so as not to cover you.
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly with my guest Angelo Favas. He's giving a recital in Springfield on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. And you can hear that courtesy of the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. A nice variety of compositions. We're hearing a few today, and I think we'll have time for one more coming up. The phone number, if you want to get tickets, if you even need advance tickets, I don't know. You may be able to just get them at the door. Actually, it says will be collected at the door. But if you want more information, like directions, the area code is 217-726-8991. That's 217-726-8991. And our program today is made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. What are we going to end with?
Well, let's see. I have to tune again.
Okay.
Do you need something long, something short?
Choose what you'd like to play. We have time. So.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Would you like something Spanish or something Filipino?
Oh, you have something Filipino?
I do, actually.
I don't know if I know any Filipino composers.
This one that I am performing is Bayani de Leon. He comes from a family of gifted musicians. His father actually is a national artist in the Philippines, his late father. And his siblings are all either composers or performers in their own right. And he's living now in upstate New York. And I came across this piece from my very first teacher. He wrote it out for me. My very first teacher had photographic memory. And he wrote out the music for me. And then I lost it. Hmm. And I wanted to, after I had recorded my first CD, I wanted to include this piece on the second CD. Those CDs, by the way, are called Philippine Treasures, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And they're, the music in them are what you call kundimans, or Filipino love songs, originally for voice and piano, and they're transcribed for guitar. But this piece I wanted to include, and so I contacted the composer. I had lent my score. And never got it back.
It never came back. And you, alas, don't have photographic memory.
I don't. And I did remember parts of it, you know, but not all of it. And, of course, I didn't make a copy, foolish of me. Mm. And so I contacted the composer, and he said, okay, I'll take a look. And then he comes back and says, you know, I only have the first 3 or 4 pages. I don't have the complete one. Oh, okay. You know, I would like to record it. Let me think about it. And then about 2 days later, I get an email with an attachment. He just rewrote the last few pages.
So it may or may not have been like the original.
It's very close from what I remember. It's not exactly like it, but it's very close.
Well, now I'm intrigued. So can we hear it?
Sure. This is called the Variations on a Philippine Folk Song, Lulay. By Bayani de Leon.
Thank you.
I like that. Angelo Favis performing here on Live and Local. Remind us who wrote that and what was it called?
It's called Variations on a Philippine Folk Song, Lulay. That's the title of the folk song. And the composer is Bayani De Leon.
And the Philippines are your place of origin.
Yes.
And Angelo is now the professor of guitar at Illinois State University, and he is going to be performing in solo recital this Saturday evening at 8 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church in Springfield. That's on South 7th Street, sponsored by the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. For more information, you can phone area 217-726-8991. And I'm really glad you were able to come over to the studio and play for us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
It's been wonderful to hear you, and we'll definitely invite you again. And I actually like that idea from earlier about maybe having a small room full of guitarists playing different kinds of styles of music. That might be kind of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially if we were able to dream up anything that you could all play together.
Oh, gosh.
Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you, Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly.